And welcome to the Department of Metal Antiquities.
Where we remember what everyone else has forgotten.
As always, it is Nick Cameron, also of Glacially Musical, joined by my good friend, a non-superb Owl Sunday fan, Duncan Evans from Leeds, United Kingdom.
Wow, I did not even understand that introduction, but I appreciate it, so
hello. Do you know what, as we record this, and as I will publish this most likely, do you know what today is in the United States of America?
I do not.
Today is the most unofficial and holiest of all days.
Okay.
It is Super Bowl Sunday.
Super Bowl Sunday. All right. Well, I've heard of that at least.
So we're getting towards
the same page.
I am not a fan of the league because they took our team away twice. We lost two teams by the NFL. So I do love the game. I just don't love this league. I follow other brands. However, there is a big deal going on with one of the players in the game today and Taylor Swift. And I love Taylor Swift as a human. I don't like her music, but I think she is a great and wonderful human being. And I am rooting for her. And she also makes fragile white guys in the NFL really afraid. Fox News is like doing conspiracy theories about
her. I've seen this.
And it's just like the most ridiculous thing. So what I am rooting for, and what I am rooting for today in the Superb Owl Sunday is...
Oh, I see. Superb Owl is Super Bowl as a sort of hashtag. I'm with you.
You are not allowed to say Super Bowl in any advertising content.
Okay. So they literally say Superb Owl?
No. Some people say that. Typically, what people say is the big game.
Mm-hmm.
You know... I've gotten about 45 emails in the last 48 hours from pizza places saying, order your pizza now for the big game. Well, no, because I'm making cheeseburger dip, chicken wings, and an assorted other dip. So no, I'm fine. I'm fine. But I am rooting for the Kansas City Chiefs, who reside in my state, to win. And then for Travis Kelce to propose to Taylor Swift on the field.
Okay. All right.
That's what Nick is rooting for.
Cool. Well,
because
I hope it'll
piss off a bunch of people that I don't like.
All right. Always fun.
So obviously we are talking about Izzy Stradlin and the Juju Hounds. What do you?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say. Yeah, we are. Obviously, he's from Guns N' Roses. So, yes, this is largely a forgotten record.
It came out and was forgotten. You're younger than me. So when this comes out, you're like five.
I was young. Yeah, exactly.
When this comes out, I am, because it comes out in 1992. Mm-hmm. So this comes out when I am 16. So I'm a little older. I did not even know this album existed for another 5 to 6 years.
Yeah, fair enough.
I can remember specifically hearing about it in a Beavis and Butthead episode.
Mm-hmm.
When they would watch the videos, there was one episode where they watched the video from Izzy Stradlin and the Juju Hounds, and that was how I learned this existed. My ex and I was with my first wife for a number of years, over a decade, and she bought it. So we had it. I had heard it. I also had no recollection of this record in any way. Comes out in 1992, as I mentioned. It is on Geffen Records. So
yeah, Guns N' Roses label. I guess it makes sense. They already had him through Guns N' Roses, so he had all the contacts, and you know, and maybe he was even still contracted to them in some way. I'm not completely sure how that would work, but it's possible.
I am not certain when Izzy left Guns N' Roses.
I think it was the same year. I think it was about 92.
It was around this time because he finished. Izzy Stradlin is on every significant Guns N' Roses release. Appetite for Destruction, GNR Lies, Use Your Illusion 1 and 2. Those are the first four releases, and he is on all of them. Gilby Clark comes in during the recording, I believe, or just post recording of the Use Your Illusion records, and that's when.
Yeah, it was 1991, the end of 1991, that Izzy Stradlin left, and I guess that Gilby Clark came in pretty much straight away after that.
Yeah, he came in, and the only Guns N' Roses record Gilby Clark is on is the Spaghetti Incident, the covers record.
Yep.
Which honestly might be a good one for us to do, because mm-hmm. that's another one that kind of came and went. I mean, how many forgotten Guns N' Roses records are there? It's not... Although there's not that many Guns N' Roses records.
Well, this is true. Because
the only other records they have besides the four we have mentioned, five we have mentioned, would be the Chinese Democracy, which Absolutely. Is actually much better than you probably think.
One of my yeah, I'm not big on it. I'm not big on it. But who knows? Maybe we could even do that because that.
Oh,
is
it's got Buckethead and Twiddles, and Duncan only likes Necessary Twiddles, and I like Twiddles of all shapes. I am Twiddle positive. Duncan is not.
Yeah, I just think it's like a really really okay rock album. It's a very very okay rock album.
It's the yeah, okayest Guns N' Roses record there is.
Yeah, yeah.
I will say it does get a little monotonous, but we're gonna yeah. get out of the Chinese Democracy and move back into the Juju Hounds. My first question, I guess, would be to you, Duncan. What in the world is a Juju Hound? Is that like an English thing that I don't know about?
Yeah, I don't know. We just glitched out there a little bit. I do not know what a Juju Hound is. I think Juju is a bit like mojo or some kind of almost voodoo
type. Oh, yeah. Oh, okay, so a Juju Hound is a magical dude, I guess.
Okay.
You got that Juju, you got your mojo.
Yeah,
there's also exactly. Juju bees, which are like really terrible candy.
Right, okay.
I don't know if you have those.
The album title doesn't enlighten. Yeah, the album title doesn't enlighten us much more. There's some people in pointy hats and stilts walking across what looks like the sea.
Oh, there we go. There, yeah, yeah. This
strange
is...
album cover. I don't think it's a very good album cover, honestly.
No, but it's terrible.
But maybe those are Juju Hounds. I would guess that Juju Hounds look a bit like that.
I can see what he's doing, and I feel like he really missed the mark here. If, you know, you look at this, as you pointed out, they are wearing conical hats, the traditional witch's hat. As anyone who has seen any of the Wizard of Oz movies will well recognize that. Then they are in stilts. I don't know why they're on stilts unless they are perhaps, and maybe it's just because I live in a Catholic city and I'm focused on this at this point. Perhaps that is a Mardi Gras reference. That is a New Orleans. It looks a little New Orleans-ish, a little... Maybe they're not on the sea, but on the bayou.
Yeah, actually, yeah, I think you're right. I was maybe getting some East Asian vibes from this, but I think I might be off the mark on that.
I can see where you would get some East Asian vibes. The first guy, especially the first one, looks like a samurai.
Yeah, exactly. You've got some samurai vibes going on, and it almost looks like a samurai sword, but I think it's not.
It does look like a samurai sword, but I believe you're right. I believe that it's not a samurai sword. So we have this worldly kind of visual going on here.
But, yes.
You know, I'm going to roll back the clock a little bit here. So Guns N' Roses is, in my humble opinion, the greatest car crash in music history.
Wow, bold words. But I can see where you're coming from.
Hear me out on this. So mm-hmm. they come out of nowhere, and I'm going to use air quotes, or as Duncan would say, I'm going to use brackets.
I say inverted commas.
Oh, inverted commas. So they come out of nowhere, brackets, inverted commas, quotation marks. And out of nowhere, of course, is several years of touring with them by themselves, touring with Aerosmith, touring with everybody until their first record finally blows up. But when it blows up, it blows up. And at that point in time, they ride, and I mean, I know I've talked about this quite a bit. This is like one of my things that I love, and I call it the phenomenon record. Duncan, what is a phenomenon record?
I'm guessing it's where a record just gets a whole lot of hype about it and people just really get behind that whole record and it starts a whole new scene or something like that. I don't
Gonna
know.
be it's a little more correct, but I'm a little more specific than that. Specifically, a phenomenon record to me is 25 million copies sold or more.
Okay, I see.
So if you think about rock and metal phenomenon records, name a couple. It's not many.
Probably not. Yeah, I'm not an expert on exactly how many each record is, but yeah, there probably
Obviously,
aren't a
Dark
whole lot.
Side of the Moon.
Yeah, Led Zeppelin 4.
I don't think it did at the time. I think
No,
that's
maybe
I think
not.
that's
Okay.
later. I don't think any of Led
Yeah,
Zeppelin
sure.
records were phenomenons of the time. I think
Right, they've more
because
built
of
that
the
up steadily.
way, correct, because of the way Led Zeppelin comported themselves. I don't know. Because of the way they did things. They didn't want to be famous. They didn't want to be known. So that's a different deal. So you have Pink Floyd, Dark Side of the Moon. You have, of course, Guns N' Roses, Appetite for
Michael
Destruction.
Jackson, bad.
Thriller, not bad.
Thriller, sure.
But I wouldn't call that a rock record. I wouldn't call that a rock or metal record. Of
No,
course,
fair
then
enough.
you've
Fair
got Black or Metallica's Black Album. But think
enough.
about bands like Led Zeppelin, Black Sabbath, did not have this, did not have this kind of record that just changes the world to where everyone and your brother has this record. And then if you think about it, it's only one in, I mean, if the 25 million records are sold in America, that's one in 10 Americans.
Yeah, that's quite a lot.
And then you consider that there are only, an American family is roughly 4.5 people. So that's only 60 million families.
Yeah.
So 60 million families, and so one out of every other house, basically.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, by that stage, they're going to be getting loads and loads of radio play for those singles and stuff. So more people will have heard the record or the main tracks from it.
Correct. It was Sweet Child of Mine that really broke them. And
Absolutely.
I hate that song. I still don't like that song.
Yeah, I mean,
I
I just
love that
don't
first
know.
record, but
Yeah,
I hate that song.
I just don't know if I like it or not anymore because I've heard it so many times. I just can't
Actually,
really have an opinion on it. I quite like the end part with all the solos and all that.
yeah.
It seems contrary to what I might normally say, but I do like that bit. The first part, I've just heard it so many times. I don't know what to think about it.
Yeah, no, I completely get that. I actually heard Even Flow by Pearl Jam yesterday, and I was kind of like grooving to it, and I'm like, oh my God, what happened to me? But moving forward. So Guns N' Roses explodes. And these guys, if you look back at their career at this time, even before they got signed to Geffen, before they, went on tour, these guys were just what I'm I there's no way to put this that's not going to sound terrible. These guys were a train wreck.
Yeah.
Slash actually calls up Paul Stanley, who tried to produce them, and goes, "Oh yeah, Paul, I heard you've got a BC Rich, you got a BC Rich endorsement. Yeah, I would love it if you could send me a couple guitars," because he had pawned all of his guitars before
Yeah.
going into the studio to buy heroin.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, this is, Mr. Brownstone is a real story.
For
So
sure, man. Yeah, they were living it. They were living it.
they completely were. I mean, I read Slash's book, and it's the life they were living at this point in time is just absolutely disgusting. And I mean, disgusting, like, ew. So actually well past ooh. I mean, it just walking in the door to their apartment would probably give you the ick, and walking to the bathroom would probably give you the clap. But so they were doomed to fail. It's like, it's like Kurt Cobain quoting the great poet Joe Elliott of Def Leppard. Previous podcast subject, Joe Elliott of Def Leppard.
Indeed, indeed.
It's better to burn out than fade away. And I believe Guns N' Roses completely burned out. They just went whoosh, just fireball quickly. They had a huge hit with Sweet Child of Mine. They have a huge hit with Patience on GNR Lies. They have a huge hit with You Could Be Mine. And this is when the wheels just fall off the truck. They quickly start parting out members. So by the time, you know, in the span of basically 3 or 4 years, the band goes from 5 guys down to 3 guys, down to 1 guy. It just went whoosh. Mm-hmm. So that's why I say, I mean, they are the greatest car crash in rock and roll history. It is a fascinating story, and it is something really cool to, you know, kind of analyze, but it's amazing how quickly they fell apart.
For sure, for sure. So, yeah, and I believe Izzy Stradlin was the first guy to leave the band, or was it... he wasn't actually. It was the drummer, wasn't
it?
Yeah,
I believe it was Stephen Adler.
Stephen Adler left.
He was kicked out for too much heroin.
Right, yeah, and he was struggling to play the parts on whichever track it was, Estranged or something like that. I can't remember the track now, but or Don't Cry, whichever one it was.
Does it matter? One of the huge, big nut bar ballads off of one of the Use Your Illusions,
which are both double albums on vinyl. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, so then Izzy leaves, and he's basically just had enough. So it says here. Hang on, I'm just having a look. I can't find it now. I've lost it. But essentially, he just had enough, and he was essentially feeling like he was being demoted to a lower position, and Axl Rose was becoming more and more diva-like. So, that's right. And that's right as well. It says here he got sober as well. So, you know, he was putting up with things when he wasn't sober that when he got sober, he just couldn't put up with. Well, so
the thing about Axl Rose at this time, while they're recording the record, have you ever wondered why Axl had the ownership of the name?
Why he had the ownership of the name? I think he just wrote up all these contracts and was shoving them under people's noses, essentially, wasn't he?
Kind of, sort of. Basically, they're recording the record, and he says to them, oh, yeah, by the way, if you don't give me complete control of the name, I quit.
Right. There you go.
So the thought process was, well, you know what? Let's finish the record and finish this tour and whatever. Let's get to tomorrow, because that's better than just, you know, falling on our sword today.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So that's it. So he's out, and then I guess he just wants to do something. He's not bothered about playing the massive stadiums. He just wants to do smaller shows, just wants to play. And he ends up hooking up with essentially half of the Rolling Stones on this record. So he has an ace band. So, so he's got a four-piece band of the main musicians. But then you've got Ian McLagan on this record, who was in the Small Faces and the Faces and collaborated with the Rolling Stones. Ron Woods on a track on this record.
I did not even see that.
Yeah, he did co-vocals and guitar and wrote the track on track 9, which we'll get to in a little bit. Mark Ford does some guitar, who was part of the Black Crowes in their sort of classic era. And Nicky Hopkins, who also worked with the Stones and was a session musician and collaborated on loads of tracks by The Who, The Beatles, The Kinks and stuff like that, is on here. Someone called Donnie Gray. Oh, I'm not sure who that is, actually. But you've got a lot of big connections here with the older guard of this sort of rock and roll music.
And he has guys that go on to become the newer guard of music. Jimmy Ashurst goes on to play bass for Buck Cherry in later years.
Absolutely. And there's a guy called Charlie Quintana, who's the drummer, who was Quintana, who was a member of the Plugs and was also in Social Distortion from 2000 to 2009. So he's done all sorts. And then you've got a guy called Rick Richards, also on guitar, part of the Georgia Satellites, a southern rock band. And then obviously Izzy himself, and that's the main four-piece lineup.
It's amazing the people that he assembled for this.
Yeah, totally.
Some of them were unknown at the time, but they become very well known and very, you know, very established guys. It's amazing. And then Izzy, however, basically rides off into obscurity.
Yeah, unfortunately so. I don't think he's done a whole lot else in the way of solo albums. I'm not entirely sure. I think he has done some stuff.
You know what? He actually has a bunch.
Oh, well, there you go then. He has a load. He has a load of solo albums, which means... Oh, there you go. Yeah, I'm looking at this now. Yeah, he's got like 10 solo albums. So we always do all of our research in advance for this.
All of it. So, I mean, we completely know. I mean, he's got, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Yeah, he has 10 solo records that he did after this, but nothing... But most of it comes in the 2000s up until 2010.
Yeah. Until 2010. Yeah.
And I don't want to, you know, compare him to this guy too much, but I'm going to do it anyway because I hate myself. And I can't, once I come up with an idea, I just can't stop. He reminds me a lot of Vinnie Vincent, not the crazy rip off, kill your fans kind of thing, but where he just becomes obscure. He just kind of fades. Oops. Sorry, I bumped the microphone. I talk with my hands. He just kind of fades off into obscurity and I think we quickly learned just how important Izzy Stradlin was to the Guns N' Roses sound, the Guns N' Roses rhythm sound.
For sure. I remember when I saw him guesting with the newer Guns N' Roses on some tour around 2006, I think. And you could hear the Izzy Stradlin sound and what difference that made to the overall texture of the guitar parts. And you think, yeah, that's what we've been missing when he came out for maybe 3 or 4 or 5 songs or something like that.
He came out for that much? Holy crap.
A few. It may have been 2 or 3. I might be exaggerating, but he came out.
You know what? If it's not just one.
No, it was more than one.
Yeah, that's amazing. Actually, Allie and I, my wife and I were talking last night about the concerts we're going to, because we just bought tickets to go see a Beatles tribute band at the Fabulous Fox Theater. And she looks at me and she goes, "I want to see Guns N' Roses." We had tickets from the last time they were in, and they canceled it.
Oh, there you go. I've never seen them with this newer sort of semi-reformed line.
I've seen nothing of Guns N' Roses ever, because when the first time they came here, they started a riot.
Okay.
And then they were banned from the city.
Right. Yeah.
Forever. So the first time they came back was in 2017, 2018, when this whole reunion thing started.
Yep.
And I was going to buy tickets. The cheapest tickets are $25.
Okay.
They're playing our American football stadium, which
that's
holds,
pretty incredible to have tickets at that price.
Yeah, it holds 70,000 people. So
okay, so you'd be miles away.
Oh yeah, like a whole other county away.
Yeah,
like I was for Metallica.
Mm-hmm.
But except Metallica was in the round, so it wasn't as far. But I was gonna buy tickets, and I put the two tickets in the cart, and the cost two $25 tickets cost me $125.
Hang on, say that again.
Two $25 tickets.
Yes.
The total price, including fees, was $125.
Well, that's insane.
Yeah, I went, you know what? I don't, these, if you had just told me it's $65 a piece.
Yeah.
Probably just would have hit submit. Here's my credit card, whatever. I don't care. Maybe I don't eat, you know, beef next. Maybe I don't eat meat next week. It's fine. Mm-hmm. But they didn't do that. And it always feels so. We actually bought Stevie Nicks tickets this week, too.
Oh, nice.
Lawyer wife is a huge, huge fan of Stevie Nicks. I'm a huge fan of my wife. So I'm going.
Mm-hmm.
My ticket, I'm not going to say how much we spent on this, but I will say this much. When ticket prices went crazy, they changed how they do service fees. Service fees are now a percentage in America. And
I
not
see.
A flat fee.
Okay, so that's hopefully better, as long as the percentage isn't like 80% or 90%.
Actually, it wasn't that bad. It was about 30%.
Okay.
So we
okay.
spent about $70 in service fees.
Okay, wow, that is quite a lot.
And the service fee is me, the service I'm getting is me having to download my own ticket
Oh yeah, there's no service involved at all. It's just a profit fee. That's it.
Correct. Did not speak to a human, just did everything online. So, I mean,
Exactly. But there we go.
they should be ashamed.
Indeed, indeed.
Anyhow, I feel
Well,
like we've lost the
no,
plot.
we've lost it a bit, but we'll bring it back. So I think this album did okay at the time. I think it got some really good reviews. So Kerrang gave it 4 stars. It said, I'm just looking at Wikipedia. Orlando Sentinel gave it 4 stars out of 4. It says here, let me just have a look, that yeah, that's right. It was named 16th album of the year by Kerrang in 1992.
Which
Trouser
that
Press.
it, if you're for somebody who comes out of Guns N' Roses to be said as the 16th best album in Kerrang, I mean, that's a big deal.
Yeah, sure. And Trouser Press called, said it was a surprisingly strong album, et cetera, and compared it to Keith Richards' solo work. And there were three, sorry, two hit rock radio hits. So not mainstream radio, but rock radio. So the Shuffle It All and Somebody Knocking. So one of those will be the one that you saw on Beavis and Butthead, with two singles from the record, which did pretty well. Top 20 of the rock chart.
Gonna
So,
quickly jump in here. I
yeah.
feel like we have had references to Trouser Press many times,
Probably.
and I still have no idea what it is.
Well, it is. I think it's a punk thing. It started in New York in 74 as a kind of fanzine, and then it became
Well,
a
there you
punk
go.
scene basically. And they used to, yeah, a lot of British bands. America's Only, yeah, it used to feature the slogan America's Only British Rock Magazine. So there you go. I guess the whole birth of UK punk probably happened at the exact same time as this magazine was burgeoning. So there we go.
Now, when they say trouser press, are they talking about press about trousers, or are they
Oh,
talking
you
about
don't
a
say.
machine
Yes,
that
it's
presses
both.
trousers?
It's the machine, yeah, because you say pants, not trousers. We
Well, of
say
course,
pants.
we speak English, so of course we say
There you go.
pants.
Well, we say underpants as well, but
Yeah, I
we
learned
say
when
pants meaning underpants.
learned watching the IT Crowd when
Yes.
Moss and Roy are hanging out after Jen gets promoted. We've done everything. We've been jousting in our pants, and they were in their tighty whities. And I'm like, what in the world? No,
Exactly.
those are under, those go under your pants, you nut bar. Anyway, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, so trousers, a trouser press
Was
is
that a
like
good Irish accent, by the way? Because it sounded great in my head.
I'm gonna be honest, Nick, it was not the best, but
Oh, wow. It sounded perfect in my head.
I
Perfect in
thought
my
you were
head.
going for an English accent,
Oh, no.
slightly kind of off there,
All
but
right,
anyway.
I will admit my accenting today is not working. I tried doing
It's all
English.
right.
I was trying to do my Duncan accent, and I missed.
I
Anyway,
liked that one. I liked that one.
all right, then I
So,
did great.
this record got some decent critical acclaim at the time. I don't know how many it sold. Probably not loads because it only was hitting the rock album charts and not the mainstream ones. So, comparing it to Guns N' Roses, not a whole lot.
Not a fair
Yeah,
comparison.
that's it. And then the band essentially fizzled out after not very long. I think they did. A tour. I'm just looking now. Yeah, they did a big tour in 1992, going into 1993.
And they did a live album too, or live
So they
EP.
played. Yeah, they played Leeds. They played. Yeah, they did a live one the next year, which maybe may have been a contractual obligation thing, I feel. But yeah, so they started touring in 20 on 23rd of September 1992, and finished 19th of September 93 in Japan. So they did like yeah, UK, Europe, Japan, Australia, New Zealand, everywhere. But, well, not everywhere. Mexico, US,
Are you
Canada,
sure
Japan.
not everywhere? This sounds like everywhere.
I mean,
Or let me rephrase. It sounds
kind of
like
everywhere in the developed Western world, I guess, you know.
everywhere that matters to this kind of music.
Yeah, I think you're probably about right. I think you're probably about right there.
All righty, we have pittered and pattered. Is there anything pressing, or do you want to move forward to the track by track?
No, let's move forward to the track by track. Yeah, I'm just looking very quickly actually at the album charts. Yeah, the highest it got was in Australian albums. It got to number 42, got to number 52 in the UK, US Billboard 102. So, yeah, not amazing compared to Guns N' Roses, but still, this is a
You
these are not
can't,
bad
I mean,
figures.
you can't compare it to Guns N' Roses. That's
Exactly.
You know, I mean, I don't know if we've discussed this, and you know, I'm now doing the Duncan thing. Yeah, we're gonna do the track by track after I. Now we're gonna go straight into the track by track after I discuss 18 more things. So yeah, here's number 17 for me.
Yep.
And this is something I think we probably should discuss, because this is basically our bread and butter. Is at least 30 to 40% of our albums are solo records by people in 30 to 40% of the episodes are based on albums of dudes that were in huge bands. Mm-hmm. And if you, how many bands and how many solo artists can you name after they left that they paced or outpaced their previous band? I can name a couple.
Not many.
Obviously, a few, yeah. Ozzy Osbourne,
yeah, exactly.
Dio.
Dio, yeah, just
you
about.
Know what? Actually, yeah. That's really funny.
Yeah.
Because if you think about it, you know, Ozzy leaves Sabbath, he outpaces Sabbath. They bring in Dio. Dio leaves Sabbath, he outpaces Sabbath. All right, Tony, maybe you're the problem. But other than that, I mean, that's really about it. So it's just, you know, it is what it is. I'm just going to say the live album they did also, and this is number 18, and then I'll go to the track by track. I swear to God, I promise. Their live release, I'm not going to say album anymore because it is an extended play. And previous podcast subject Union featuring Bruce Kulick and John Corabi did it right when they released a live record. They released a double live record, even though the band only had one album. So they included half of their first studio record, which is an amazing record. Previous podcast subject again. Great record. And then they also did a bunch of covers, and they did probably four or five songs from their previous bands. And they did a great, great live release. Whereas Izzy Stradlin and the Juju Hounds does a 5-track release featuring one Rolling Stones cover.
Indeed.
Not good. So anything else before any more background?
No, let's get into this. Let's do this.
Alrighty. Nobody is rocking, because obviously someone's a knocking.
Yeah, Somebody Knocking track one. So this is one of the singles. It kicks in, it's very Rolling Stones-esque. You've got this nice rock and roll. Groove, it's catchy, they go straight in with the hook, so there's this sort of don't bore us, get to the chorus attitude. It's feel good, it's bluesy, it's Americana, it's much more laid back and relaxed than Guns N' Roses, and it really rollicks through the sections. You've got a bridge, you've got a mid-8, then back to the hooky verse, and all in the space of about a minute. You've got the Hammond organ going on, you've got these Americana tropes, the acoustic guitar, the slide guitar. And it gels great. There's just enough sort of rock to it that balances out the sweetness of all these acoustic instruments and the bluesy Americana side. The singing's great. You know, it does have a Keith Richards sort of edge to his voice with that laid back, smoky drawl. It's nothing new at all, but it's done really, really well. And it's just well written, great, straight to the point, pop sensibility, rock and roll. So yeah, thumbs up.
As always, I stopped taking notes because Duncan just does it. He just gets it right. And what I will say to buttress everything he said, Duncan, do you remember when we did Joe Perry Project, I've Got the Rock and Rolls Again?
I do, yes, I do.
This song, Somebody Knockin', is precisely what Joe Perry was trying to be exactly on that whole record and totally never succeeded.
Exactly. Yeah, I remember that was the whole topic was that, you know, sometimes you can do what's been done a million times before and you just do it so well that it's fine. It doesn't matter that everyone else has already done this because you're just doing it so well.
Completely,
and that's what this is. And that's what
correct.
The Joe Perry Project did not do. So, yeah.
Correct, correct, correct. And so, we're going to move on to track two, the kind of thing that my doctor told me I need to get. Pressure Drop.
Okay, well, this is a cover of Toots and the Maytals, which is a reggae group. Yeah, so now this kicks in and it's much more punk. It's faster. It's not hardcore punk or anything like that, but it's got a slightly more Guns N' Roses-esque edge to it, a little bit more aggression, a little bit more raucous. I don't think we've got the Hammond and stuff on this track. You can check while I'm talking if you want, but I'm pretty sure there isn't any. But you know what? It actually, this can go badly wrong when punk bands and rock bands try and cover reggae. It can just be a bit of a disaster. But you know what? This one works. And I remembered it because I have this on CD. I've got it right here. I bought it when I was a teenager.
Look at this, Duncan bringing out the physical media.
Exactly. So yeah, and I really liked it at the time. I was very into this sort of music at that time, more so than I am now. But I remembered this working, and I was right, it works great. It's super catchy. You've got these little nods, sorry, to dub and reggae with the dub style delay on the vocals, but it's just a punk version. And this is the first time when I just noticed how great the band are. I mean, they were brilliant on track one, but it was a laid back track. This is a bit more lightning pace, and you've got these absolutely tight drums. You've got these walking bass lines, these arpeggio guitars, absolutely gelling. These are cl clearly high class session musicians, and you know, Izzy's pretty good himself. You know, obviously, I'm undercooking that compliment there. He's a great player. Yeah, works. They can do the proper reggae really well. So another thumbs up from me. Short and sweet, and just does what it needs to do. Great track.
Fair enough. Did you know this was released on vinyl in Europe?
The whole album.
Yeah.
I didn't. So there you go.
Here
I
is a
guess.
copy for 20 euros.
Nice. Okay.
I think I might be getting a Dunkin' order lined up pretty
There you
soon.
go. Yeah. We can do that.
Anywho, I might have tipped my hand a little bit. What's great about this next track is it is different while being the same. It has a different feel while continuing to be the same people. And yes, to point out, no, there was no Hammond organ on this one, which is unfortunate because I love that Hammond organ.
Same here. I don't think it would have worked as well on this track though. And it's all the
No, it
Hammond.
wouldn't have worked at all.
It's all Ian McLagan, isn't it? I believe all of that Hammond stuff is Ian McLagan.
That is correct. And you know
Yeah.
what? If you're thinking, you're looking back, it's all just time gone by.
Indeed. Well, this hit, kicks in with a bow diddly rhythm, the dunk 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 dunk, with acoustic guitar and mandolin, quite steady pace, probably slower than I just did it then. Very Americana, very blues. 12-bar blues variation with a nice major key turnaround riff at the end. And you've got these hand claps and these sweetened elements of the sound again, which work great actually. It's a good balance. I would say the vocals are perhaps a little bit less confident here and a little bit buried in the mix, but they're still strong. So this one's feel good, uplifting, slightly whimsical Americana. Perhaps didn't blow my mind as much as the previous couple of tracks, but you know, a strong track nevertheless.
I like that you brought up Americana, and I feel bad that you did first as well because you're British. But I mean, I should be the one bringing up the Americana. This is exactly correct. And you know what? One of the great things about a band, you know, and I don't rarely will I ever quote Jerry Garcia
Okay.
because I hate the Grateful. I mean, I hate the Grateful Dead. They're just,
Okay.
I know
Fair
everybody else
enough.
loves them.
We'll get onto that discussion another time because I can see where you're coming from. But anyway.
But one of the smartest things Jerry Garcia ever said about his band was, if you are in this band and you love this piece of music you bring to the band, you are going to be really sad because it's going to be processed and moved around. I don't know. I felt like there were 47 people in that band, like 47 people in the Grateful Dead. So, you know, Jerry brings a riff or he brings a chord progression or he brings a lyric or whatever, and then it filters through all these different people. And one of the things I love about what we do here, what I in my musical taste personally, the being able to, you know, I love solo records, and that's kind of a big chunk of what this is. So we get to really see what that piece of the puzzle somebody brings is. And Izzy, I really think Izzy was underrated and undervalued in the Guns N' Roses sound. And yes, he loves Americana. He loves blues, and it's really cool to listen to it. And I am at this point in time on the album, I am really digging this record. It's cool. It's fun. It's However, everything that it is, everything you and I have loved about this record so far, is what 1990s music fans are going to hate completely.
I can see that. I can see that. I know what you mean.
Because this is a throwback record. This is not of the time. This is not of the place. This is definitely not of the scene.
I kind of think there was a brief period where this stuff was... There was a bit of a comeback.
Yeah, 1984.
Well, maybe a bit after, and like you had the Black Crows in about.
Okay, you know what? You're right. You're right. Later on.
You had the Black Crows in 89, and they sort of seemed to almost tie in with the whole Guns N' Roses scene. But I know what you mean. It wasn't. Basically, grunge blew that out of the water before it really got started, I think.
You know, the Black Crows were very, very poppy, had a lot of great pop sensibility.
Yeah.
More so than what Izzy Stradlin has.
A little bit, maybe only a bit, I think. Only a bit. But anyway.
But maybe it was only a bit, but it was just enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway, you might as well. You don't know what to do. You're just trying everything. Just shuffle it all.
Okay. Oh, sorry. Yeah. So this was another single. This begins with a bass melody and hook. So you've got this major key bass melody. Then it kicks in with this steady ballad Americana feel. Nice Hammond organ, very gentle drums playing the side stick. And then it kicks up another gear. And it's funny, we were just talking about the Black Crows. This is the point where they get to their probably the most Black Crows-esque on this record. So it's this slightly alternative Americana thing, a very big sound. The verse gets a little bit more rock and roll, kicks probably up another gear, but it still has that pathos and that emotion of the ballad thing going on. The drums are brilliant. I've forgotten the guy's name, but he's a fantastic drummer.
Charlie Quintana.
There you go. Noticing all these little ghosting fills and things he's doing. Brilliant. The chorus hook is super catchy and that's great. Vocals a little bit buried again, but it works for this rough around the edges style. It's a long track for a single, 6:19. They probably did an edit for the single version. But yeah, it's great. You've got these I'm not going to do an impression, but you've got this woo woo woo.
Why aren't you?
No, I just did it. Woo woo woo. And then I did it. This woo 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 bit, and then it goes into the chorus hook, and it works great. It's the Rolling Stones. It's the Faces, it's the Black Crows, it's all of that stuff. It's Americana. So, yeah, really good song, strong song. Possibly a little long at 6:19, but you know what? I'll let it off.
I have never heard that phrase, let it off. Okay, well, I know what you mean.
I'll let it go. Same thing.
All right, Elsa. I apologize if I seem a little distracted right now. There was a fire truck across the street. And I saw firemen like right out my window going up a porch. So I don't see any smoke. So nobody, I think, okay, we're okay. Anyway, you know what? This song is fun. We are getting into a little bit of what are we doing here? Unfocusedness on this album, which I think we may have mentioned a couple of times over the hundreds of records we have gone through. Where you lose a little bit of the plot like we do at the beginning of every episode we do. But still, fun song, good song. You know, nobody's angry. You don't need to call the shrimp. There's no bucket of trouble.
Nice. Okay, so that is track 5. So we're back in punk mode again, but we've actually still got some Hammond in there in the mix when it's a more punk feel. Easily the most Guns N' Roses feel yet. It's this fast and furious rock and roll riffage, what I've written. You've got this nice catchy hook. It says, do you want to do it? Do you want to do it? Do you want to do it again?
Do you?
And well, I don't know. I'm not quite clear on exactly what he's asking me about. I'd have to read the contract first. But
oh my God.
I mean, you know, if it's like, play some cool music. I don't know. Maybe that's what they're talking about. I don't know, Nick. I don't know what they're talking about. But, and it's a good track, and it's over quickly. It just goes into what it needs to do. It says it, it does it, and then it ends on again, 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 again. And that's it. And I think it's a decent track. I like it.
What do you do if you've got a bit of a punk sensibility wrapped around a bluegrass Americana sensibility after you have done a 6 minute and 20 second track? You just drop a 2 minute punk track. And you know what? Awesome. Good on you, because for the vast majority of the world, myself included, I feel like the kind of music they're doing, excuse me, I apologize. The kind of music they're doing can get very samey, can get very, that white noisy kind of thing. So when they're, switching between, there's two major styles. There's punk and there's Americana, Americana blues. And they're flipping back and forth on this, which makes the record dangerous, for lack of a better term. It's genius, because you know what? If you are dangerous and you're worried and you want to show people what it means to be unsure, you can stand on train tracks.
Indeed. And just before we go into that, I just want to continue from the point you just made there. I think it just about works the way this album goes from the punk to the Americana, and there's that range of sound. I think it could have gone badly wrong that. But I think it actually, like you were saying, it does work, and it provides enough variety for the album to still keep the interest up and for it to still, it all feels like Izzy Stradlin, and it all feels like it works. Only just, they could have pulled in one of those directions sort of 10% more, and I think it might have been too much, and I'd be saying this doesn't fit together. But as it is now, it hangs together nicely and makes it actually work better than if it had all been one or the other, I think.
Completely agree. It works, but only just, if I could use a very English phrase. But only just is perfect, because for this record, just holding it together feels perfect.
It does. I agree. So train tracks, we've got a train sample at the start, then something sounds like they're flushing a drain out after that. Yeah, it sort of does that. Then they flush the drain out or something involving water. I don't know. Maybe I don't want to know. But it kicks in with some more Stones and Faces stuff again. They're singing, of course, about train tracks. We've got a lot of bluesy tropes. I didn't catch many of the lyrics for this because the vocals are slightly buried on most of the tracks. It didn't seem like awfully trite lyrics. A lot of tropes, but I would say from the bits I caught, they seem to avoid horrendous cliche. Tropes rather than cliche, let's say. So some really nice percussion bits in this track, shaking those maracas, some great guitar parts, building up these textures. And again, this has got a big pop sensibility. I do think they have that early Black Crowes sense of what a pop song is, but made more rock and roll. But there's enough of a kick to it. There's some really beautiful slide guitar licks later on. And you know what? Just when I was writing about the slide guitar licks, I realized there have been no guitar solos yet. This is a very, I think there's one later on, but this is a very guitar solo free record.
That is not entirely true. I'm going to jump in because you're wrong.
I don't know, man.
There are solos. However, they are extraordinarily necessary twiddles. They are so necessary that they don't wow you. It just, it's just that release when it happens. It's I actually was thinking, wow, Izzy is doing a great job, till I found out he didn't play any of them.
But, he doesn't play any of the solos at all, or any of the lead. Right, okay. So it's the other guy then.
Correct. But no, there are solos, but they're not. Yeah. They're not twiddles. They're not look at me, look at me, look at me. They are song servicers.
I think I would say they're not even solos. I would say the ones we've heard so far are more just tech. They're like melodies. I get that you could class them as solos, but I feel like they're just melodies to punctuate the song. But
that's,
I get
what a solo is.
Yeah, but a solo is a more extended passage. It never really stops for more than a couple of bars, and you get a bit of lead guitar just to punctuate the song, and then we're straight back in with some more vocals. But yeah, I get it. There's these kind of in-between things where you're not quite sure that the solos are not.
We can agree on that.
There you go. There you go. But yeah, that's what I made of that song. I liked it. It's probably not the absolute greatest song on this record, but I thought it was a decent track.
I am one of the 18 Americans that loves trains, so I love when there is some kind of like train etymology. And what I find interesting is we are listening to somebody worshiping the Rolling Stones, who worshipped Robert Johnson. So we are getting an American worshiping a British who worshipped an American. And
Exactly.
it's an odd, that's why I like Cream so much. And I don't feel like we talk about, I don't feel like we talk about Cream enough because Eric Johnson or Eric Clapton is a terrible, terrible, terrible person. But I enjoy the give and take of American and British popular music where we give you X, you give us Y, we give you what in the hell was that? And this is just it's almost like you remix the remix and you're back to normal, Mitch Hedberg. But you know, Izzy's writing these songs, he is in the mode of his heroes who are in the mode of their heroes, and each time this comes up, each song that pops up, you're just wondering, how will it go?
How will it go? Well, how it goes for this track seven, is you've got acoustic guitar and clean electrics. You've got this steady balladish feel again. You've got some light side stick drums that come in. And you know me, I am very, very hit and miss with whether I'm going to like a rock ballad. I often hate the rock ballad. And for me, it's about, do I believe this? Does this emotion feel genuine? Is it something I can actually connect with, or does it just
Do
all
you
feel?
stand for what you believe?
Is that from Stand by,
Yes, it is.
who was that, Poison?
Poison. And you know
There you
what?
go.
That will always be the reference point for me for
Yeah.
cheesy rock ballads.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I remember that one. So, but
That's
this is
unfortunate.
not. This is n yeah, indeed. This is not that at all. This one works. You've got that pathos and that emotion, but it's believable, it's plausible. I can feel it with Izzy and the band. It doesn't feel like they're just doing this to peacock around and show off, that hey, we can feel things, ladies, you know. Doesn't feel like that at all. So it continues building in that fashion, and honestly, it's not the best track. I would say this is probably the first track that's happened where I've said this could have been dropped. It's fine. It works feel-wise, but it just never quite melodically just doesn't quite hit those heights that we've had on a lot of the previous tracks. Feels like a subpar Rolling Stones ballad. So, it's totally fine. Just not up to the standard of the other tracks. Possibly I would have cut this one.
Completely agree. It is the okayest track on the record. And there have been a lot of ballads, and we haven't really discussed them, too much. And frankly, the ballads are kind of the low point on this album. It's just not something he's really good at. He is really good at that dirty, hollow body, Brian Setzer, Stray Cats kind of rock. And then when he tries to get on about his feelings, he's like, hey, I feel ways about things. There's my bed. Let's go there, which is gross. And then you know what? When you do that, everybody's like, oh my God, take a look at that guy.
Hang on, we got cut in the rug first, man.
Oh, balls. I'm not doing a pun for that one. No, I'm done.
That's all right. Well, so cutting the rug, track eight. We're back to the rock and roll, steady to fast, Stonesy stuff. You've got a bluesy verse followed by these bluesy guitar licks, one of those kind of half solo things going on, I guess. The pre-chorus lifts it, goes to some unexpected chords, and then you've got a really nice hooky, catchy chorus, and we're back on form here for me. Continues to build and build, and then it goes double time, and you've got a nice guitar. So here we go. Here's the solo. You've got a guitar solo, then a Hammond organ solo over the double time bit, and these are definitive solos. And then it finishes with that classic sort of shuffle blues turnaround. Do 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 do.
Yeah.
That sort of one. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, good track. Good track. Back on form.
Completely agree. There's not a whole lot I'm gonna say. Oh my God, take a look at that guy.
There you go. That's track nine. Okay. So this is written by Ronnie Wood, entirely written by Ronnie Wood, who also plays on it and does, I think he's doing joint vocals because it sounds
he is.
Yeah, it basically still sounds like Izzy, and Izzy sings a lot like Ron Wood anyway. I think it's just both of them singing at the same time, doing the same melody. Great song. It's straight in with catchy hooks. It keeps the interest up. We're back to that don't bore us, get to the chorus type of attitude. Some great piano playing from Ian McLagan, who's been doing the organ parts so far. And then again, it doesn't waste any time. Before it's, you know, you feel like it's just going great. It's exactly where it needs to be. And then they go, no, we're off on a middle eight now. But that middle eight turns out to be a coda. It's about a third of the song or something. And it goes off on this tangent to a slow minor key chord sequence with a solo, or you could call it a melody break. I think it's probably Ronnie Wood playing this. It's very, very Stones-esque. And it's a really nice departure from the rest of this record. It's a more somber section, and it's not what you'd expect on the end of this track, but actually really cool section. So yeah, I've got a big thumbs up for this track.
Yeah, Duncan always nails it. No notes there. But I will say this much. It's really cool. I mean, imagine like you have your, I mean, we imagine, Leo, I mean, we gotta imagine. We all have our heroes here. So you've got, and Izzy Stradlin is lucky enough in this world to not only be involved in music, but to be so deeply involved in music that he can get his heroes to help him.
Absolutely.
I just can't even imagine what that would be like, you know, to get, you know, oh, this guy's been in the Rolling Stones for 50 years. He's going to come sing on my track. He's going to write a song for me. Jesus Christ, that's amazing. And you know what? My mute button is really sensitive. So while you're thinking about it, you're like, oh, man, God, man. Come on now inside.
Yeah, so come on now inside. This has Nicky Hopkins on piano. Starts off with mandolin, piano, and acoustic guitar. It's slow. It's, again, balladish. But this is a really nice track for me. I really like this one. This is one that stays in my head, even though I haven't listened to this album all the way through for years, probably more than a decade. I don't know how long. But it sticks in my head, and I go back to it mentally every now and then. So you get a hint of that catchy chorus coming up early on. This is a really simple, to the point song. You've got some very basic, simple melodies, but it's heartfelt and impassioned. And when the chorus kicks in, I really love it. They bring in gospel backing vocals on the later choruses. And, you know, we've talked about those rock ballads with the gospel choirs where it all goes wrong. Once or twice. This is not that at all. This is heartfelt Americana. And the gospel backing vocals fit it absolutely perfectly. They build and build on each repetition of the chorus. Great track. Yeah, man, really like it.
This one to me is a great ender. It finishes out the record, and I know there's a hidden track. And you know what? If you do a hidden track, I hate you. I don't.
I've done a hidden track before, so you can hate me now.
I don't hate you. I love you.
Okay.
But you know, I don't like hidden tracks, so I'm not going to talk about it. But I feel like this is a great. It's not an exclamation point, because this record shouldn't have an exclamation point.
Yeah,
it's a record where it's kind of like, you know, being a long distance runner.
Mm-hmm.
You know you've got your steady pace. You're working at it. You're doing your thing. Oh, now I gotta pass that guy. I gotta pass them. So you start pounding the pavement to move forward, and then you've done it. You've made it. Okay. Let's just get back to where, and that's what I love about this album. Is it's up and down, it's left and right, it's a little bit of everything all the time. And for the most part, it works. It works all the way through.
Totally.
So for me, I guess I'm just gonna go ahead and throw it out. I am a complete spin it, and also I am now sending Duncan a link so he can buy it for me and let me know how much I got to pay him back.
Nice. All right. Cool. Well, yeah, for me, I will very briefly talk about the hidden track, which is some percussion and then some guitar noise fading in. And it's called Morning Tea. And I would guess it's not standard tea they're talking about. So it's kind of cool, but this is definitely a bonus track. It doesn't really fit with the rest of the album whatsoever. And it's a bit of it's an anomaly. It's a bit odd, but there you go. I like odd, so that's fine. But yeah, no, for me, this is definitely a spin it. There's only one track on there where I said, no, maybe this could be left off. As I said before, pretty much all of this has been done before, and it's probably been done just as well before. But it's maybe not been particularly done better than this. This is about as good as it gets for this sort of music, that feel good, pop sensibility, Americana, bluesy, swaggery rock and roll. It doesn't get a whole lot better than this. So, absolutely a spin it for me. And it's a shame they didn't carry on and do some more stuff, really. I don't fully know what happened on there. So, people can write in and tell us what happened, or we can just read Wikipedia a bit more, or do our research properly, as we should do. But yeah,
I will not do my research properly.
there we go. Well, in that case, I don't have to either. I'm off the hook as well. So yeah, spin it.
Complete spin it. Everybody, thank you for listening. This podcast is a labor of love. We do it because we enjoy it. We do it because it's fun, and we do it because it's cool to find out new music by people you really love that you've never heard. So, if you have enjoyed this, we would greatly appreciate a like, a comment, a subscription, anything you can do. Tell one friend. And you know what? Telling one friend does, it's the same as tweeting a link, putting on Facebook a link. You know, we have the facebook.com/DMA podcast where you can come, you know, be cool with us or whatever. But you know what? The fact that you listened is amazing and humbling. And I know I greatly appreciate you, and Duncan, being a musician, I know he does as well. So I will say this. Thank you very much for listening. This has been the Department of Metal Antiquities. We listened in case you didn't have to.